Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Satisfied Customer Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yes, because we actually got a nice letter from a listener the other day.
A nice letter? Get out!
No, it's true. It's from a guy named Bill in Orlando, Florida, and he's mostly, I guess, complimentary.
Ah, mostly, huh?
All right, well, just hear this.
Go ahead, read.
I listen to your program regularly and value your good advice. Recently, I noticed this sound coming from somewhere outside on the passenger side of the car. I couldn't figure out if it was coming from the front or the back. Then I remembered your advice. You said, when this happens, you get someone to drive the car around the block while you stand there and you listen carefully as the car goes by.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of days ago, I put your advice to the test. I saw a guy walking by in the neighborhood. I asked him to help me, and he readily agreed. My only question now is, where's my car?
Another satisfied customer.
Well, the noise is gone, isn't it?
Hey, don't get picky on us, man. We got rid of your noise, didn't we? Anyway, if you have a problem with your car, I'm sure we can solve it, just like we solve Bill's. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Anne Marie. I'm calling from Grandview Heights, Ohio.
Hi, Anne Marie.
Grandview Heights.
It's the best part of Columbus.
Got it.
Columbus.
Grandview Heights.
Got it.
Ohio. What's going on, Anne Marie?
I have a 2002 Saab 9.3 convertible that is making this gigantic loud noise that kind of starts off as a when I turn on the car, and then as I accelerate, it goes
Well, you know what to do? You should stop someone in the street, ask him to drive the car around the block, and you stand there, and you'll know exactly where the noise is coming from.
But I want to keep my car.
Oh, okay. You do. but don't you want to get rid of the noise? I mean, you might not be able to do both.
Yeah.
So this starts as soon as you start the engine. You don't have to be moving.
No, I don't have to be moving. It just gets louder when I accelerate.
Okay, and that's how long has that been there?
Probably 3 or 4 weeks. And I guess I kind of want to know, is my car going to implode on me? Am I safe driving it?
What kind of a noise is it?
It starts off kind of like a and then it just accelerates and gets louder.
Oh, so as the engine speeds up, the noise gets
louder.
Oh.
So if you didn't rev the engine, you just sat there with the thing in neutral or drive, the noise would not change in intensity or any...
Pitch.
Right.
Correct.
It's coming from under the hood?
It's definitely coming from under the hood. I thought I was at the back, but I looked and I have all my tailpipes and all of that stuff, so it sounds like the front.
And if it's something that changes in intensity with the engine speed, it's probably something that's driven by the engine. And the thing that comes to mind that's most likely on this car is the belt tensioner. There's a belt tensioner that has a ball bearing in it, and it's responsible for keeping the serpentine belt under the proper tension so it can run the air conditioner and the alternator and whatnot.
That belt goes around everything.
Right, and that belt tensioner is doing its job, but its bearing is worn out, and that's why it sounds like a humming noise. I'll make the noise for you. With a little bit of a growl thrown in. How's that? Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right.
I would get it someplace real soon, because when that tensioner gives up the ghost, you're going to lose your air conditioning and your alternator and all that stuff that is going to make the car impossible to drive.
Is it expensive?
Not yet. No, and I think it's important that you go. And your reluctance to have this checked out is because you're afraid it's going to be a lot of money. Is that true?
Yes, because I want to keep my car a little bit longer because there's nothing I like and I want to move to Paris, but I don't want to buy a new car.
So you're trying to will this noise away.
Exactly.
What a lot of people don't realize is that when you take that approach, the longer you wait, the likelihood is it's going to get more and more expensive rather than less and less expensive.
Okay.
Unless with your car, Tommy, I got to say that you have provided many counterexamples because noises that you had went away when those pieces fell off.
Exactly.
So it's possible that the offending piece could fall off, Anne Marie, in which case
you won't even think of it anymore.
But I don't think that's likely to happen in your case. But get it checked out, because if you're going to drive it at all this summer, you'll want it reliable, wouldn't you?
It's my only car, so I have to.
And when are you going to Paris?
As soon as I figured that out, how to work there. So I have to work on that.
Oh. So you need a job. You speak French, I assume.
A little bit. My dog speaks more French than I do.
Dog.
Does your dog bite?
No.
It's
no,
not
no.
My okay. Dog.
Would you be taking your dog with you?
I will. He actually was born there.
What kind of a dog is he?
He is a flat-coated retriever.
Oh, those are very nice dogs.
Yes, he's very sweet.
Well, I'm sure he'll have a good time in France, too.
I hope so.
Good luck, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, this is Eric from Oakland, Maine.
Hey, Eric.
Is that with a C or K?
With a C.
I had written it with a C. Oakland, Maine. Where the heck is Oakland, Maine?
Well, it's you go to Augusta and head towards nowhere.
I was there once.
And you go right through Oakland.
Yeah, it's right along the way.
All right. Good description. How can we help, Eric?
So I have a 1961 Corvair Greenbrier.
A Greenbrier is the van. Is that right?
It is the van with the bench seats, yeah.
So Chevrolet made the Corvair, which was a regular, you know, sedan, also convertible. And then I went ahead and made this thing, which was the probably their first foray into the van world.
Yeah.
And did you inherit this thing, or did you go out, did you seek one out?
My wife and I bought this as a wedding present to ourselves.
Really, huh?
No kidding. When did you get married?
5 years ago.
And this is the best thing you can come up with, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, who knows?
It's run like a champ.
Solitude can do a lot to make you crazy. It's run like a champ.
It has. We actually lost the clutch right after we bought it.
Uh-huh.
And she and I dropped the engine out and changed the clutch ourselves.
Wow, good for you.
Wow.
The problem is that when it's hot, it won't start.
When it's hot out or when the engine's hot, or both?
Well, if it's hotter outside, the problem is exponential.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's even to the point where I can't hear the gear popping out of the starter to engage the flywheel.
Oh, really? So in other words, it won't crank?
Yeah, I can't even, you know how you can hear that pop of the Bendix going
right
in and out?
Yeah.
I can't hear that.
Yeah.
Oh. And I imagine you've tried replacing the starter motor.
No, but he hasn't.
It's been rebuilt.
Not good enough.
Yeah, because it might have been rebuilt with a can of black spray paint, if you know what I mean. And I'm trying to remember, and I'm not going to. I mean, I know, for example, that Volkswagens of this vintage, and even both sides of this 1961 year, had hot weather problems with their starters because the starter drive actually wasn't housed by the starter motor. Rather, sat in and was supported by a bushing, which resided in the transmission housing.
What a memory you have.
But this thing... What's your name, anyway? But this thing, man, you're going to have to pull the starter out and see if it has, if the shaft of the starter is supported by the starter housing like most starter motors are. And if it isn't, then I would suspect that the starter is faulty or that bushing is worn out. I cannot remember the last time I had the starter motor out of a Corvair.
Oh, you
can. And forgive me if I can't help you that much, but it's going to be either that or the starter motor itself. And those kinds of things, you often get open circuits, you know, especially in the solenoid, when the temperature gets really hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I it's pretty simple. You know, you have an ignition, you have a key, an ignition lock in the dashboard, and that can't really be faulty. There's nothing that can really wear out there. If it cranks on Monday when it's cool and it doesn't crank on Tuesday when it's hot, I rather doubt the ignition switch is the culprit, but it could be.
Right.
It could be. But you could simply take the wires, you unplug the switch and take the wires and jump them with a jumper wire and see if it cranks. If that's the case, it may be the ignition switch. But I know there are other 61 Greenbrier owners out there who are just sitting at their desks right now emailing
writing
us.
Writing you an email.
Writing us an email saying, you dopes.
This is the only one I've seen in Maine, so I don't have anyone local to
talk
to.
Oh, there are plenty of them around, and it's the same as the Corvair, the whole setup is. So don't take the starter out until you had a chance to hear from some of our listeners.
Okay.
I'm sure there's a better answer out there. You can go to our website and check out the second opinion area because we always have people that double cross us and second guess us and do all kinds of things like that. So you'll find somebody.
Yeah, somebody.
I can't
will,
imagine that anyone
right
would.
No, you couldn't, could you?
Nah.
Good luck, Eric.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK.
Why would you buy a 61 Corvair?
Greenbrier, no less. Well, actually, the Greenbrier was kind of cute, and I think it's kind of romantic that Eric and his wife share.
It's nice.
Because we are taking his word for it. He said they bought it as a wedding gift for each other. I wonder if there was any coercion that went in this. Hon, I think, can you imagine the look on her face? Because you know it was a suggestion. You know it was his idea, right?
Hon, here's what I bought you.
Right. I think we should buy each other.
Sounds like they've been married a little bit. He said 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe they're not speaking anymore.
Maybe they haven't spoken for 5 years.
But I can imagine that she gave up a trip to Hawaii, because that could have been their wedding present to each other.
Sure. And they would have forgotten about that already, but they're not forgetting about this.
Oh, no, this thing is a constant reminder, sitting out there rusting in the driveway. Oh, boy. 888-CAR-TALK.
I should talk. I had a 63... start.
That's right. And that was sitting out there rusting in the driveway.
Yeah. But that was a lot newer than
And your
the
wife 61. Would never even ride in that car with you.
Oh, no.
Nobody would. No family member would. Just the pets. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Yeah, you know the pets, they rebelled eventually. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sigrid from Dallas, Texas.
Sigrid, S-I-G-R-I-D.
Perfect.
Right? Yeah, Sigrid.
From where?
Well, I'm living in Dallas, Texas now. I've been here about a year and a half, but I'm actually from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
No kidding. That's a big change.
What are you doing in Dallas that you couldn't do in Baltimore?
Nothing. My husband got a promotion, and I had to follow him to Dallas.
That's good. So what's up?
Well, basically, we have a 2004 Crown Victoria. And after about 75,000 miles, we decided it wasn't riding as smoothly. I mean, it was like riding on a cloud. So we replaced the shocks and the struts.
Yeah.
Well, now it is like, I mean, you can't even drink a cup of coffee. This car is, you feel every bump in the road. You feel every crack in the cement. We took it back to the shop and complained, and they said, "Oh no, this is the way it should feel, and that the once they loosen up, you'll get back to that really smooth ride that you used to enjoy."
So once they get all worn out like your old ones,
and you have to replace them again.
No, that's completely wrong.
No.
Yeah, that's okay.
Baloney, as a matter of fact.
Well, I mean, it's possible that you had gotten used to a ride that if your shocks were completely blown out. You would have that, what we call the ocean liner ride, where you every time you hit a bump, the car would go up, down, up, down, and you would get seasick. So you would get that kind of a ride if your shock absorbers were not working correctly. But short of, I mean, I trust you didn't have that kind of a ride, the seasick kind of ride, did you?
No. Mm. It was just not quite as smooth as it used to be.
And when you say not quite as smooth, quantify that. I mean, what happened, and did it happen overnight, or was it a gradual thing?
It was gradual.
And did it happen when you were in Baltimore or in Dallas?
Probably on the drive from Baltimore to Dallas.
But you began to really notice it in Dallas?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
It may be the different kinds of roads they have in Texas. You have a lot more cement roads in Texas.
That's true.
Then you
That's
have,
true.
You know, in fact, my recollection is that the majority of the roads, I mean, at least the primary roads, the secondary roads are still asphalt. You know, but and is it worse on some roads than others?
Was it worse?
No, it wasn't worse. Now that they've been replaced, it's horrible on every road.
Everything.
Did you replace the tires at any time during this whole process?
No, the tires have been replaced, but a while ago.
And so when the tires were replaced, that didn't cause the problem?
No.
Where did you have this work done?
Sigrid's going to be a tough nut to crack.
Oh, God.
That's all right.
Well, remember, we're
Sigrid,
new to
I want
the
you
area.
To know I have one hand on the wheel of automotive misfortune. I'm about to give it a spin, but we're going to give you an 11th hour reprieve here. But go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Well, okay, we're new to the area, so we took the car to the service station that was, like, connected to the Texaco.
Is it just noisier, or is it
No,
or is
it's
it just...
bumpy. I mean, you really can't drink a cup of coffee in the car without spilling it all over yourself. This is really extreme.
All right, you know what it is? They probably overlook something that gets overlooked all the time and may have caused the problem to begin with, and no shock absorbers in the world are going to fix this.
Uh-oh.
You have overinflated tires, and it's something you would never notice. No, your tires are probably designed to hold 35 pounds of pressure, but I wouldn't be surprised if some yo-yo along the way, maybe someone in Baltimore.
Not not Baltimore. It couldn't be Baltimore.
Couldn't be Baltimore, no.
But somebody, and that moron could have been your husband.
well, that could be true.
If someone just stuck the thing on there and filled up the tires until they looked right, then that would do it.
Yeah, you could have 70 pounds of air in every tire, and that would make the ride so harsh that your teeth would chatter. So what you need to do is
buy yourself a little gauge.
Okay.
And see how much air is in each tire.
Yeah, and then let us know, because I wouldn't be surprised if you got one that's up at 80.
Thank you so much. I mean, seriously, we've been worrying about this problem for months.
Yeah.
And I was like, we'd ask people, but, you know, no one with authority. And then I said, we need someone to ask. And then the light bulb went off over my head.
I think my brother's he's onto something here.
It may be. I was on my seat for a minute there. Anyway, Sigrid, good luck.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye. Hey, Tomas.
Yeah.
Do you remember last week's puzzler?
No. Give me a hint, though.
Well,
give
it had to do with babes, beer, and cement trucks.
Sounded good till you got to the cement trucks.
Well, actually, I made up the part about the babes and the beer. I was just trying to get your attention.
Oh.
The puzzler is really about a cement truck.
How fascinating.
Well, we'll be back with all of the exciting details.
Yeah, exciting, all right.
And more of your car questions, too, in just a minute, so please stay tuned. And even though the network board of directors asks us to park around the back and use a delivery entrance whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's, what did I say, exciting? Never mind. Last week's puzzler. Anyway, this was from my spring break series, and it came in from a fellow named Richard Blythe, and goes something like this.
Go ahead.
Some years ago, a college friend and I drove to Florida for a spring break. We spent most of our money on beer and babes, and like fools, we squandered the rest. After a week of fun, broke and badly sunburned, we began the drive back to college. At one point, we found ourselves on a long stretch of a country highway that had two lanes in each direction. It was mid-morning, clear weather, certainly no inky shadows, and it was anything but a dark and stormy night.
Yeah.
And off in the distance in front of us, two trucks heading in the same direction as we were. They slowed and stopped for a red light. One of them was a cement truck, and the other was a dump truck. Now, the dump truck had a tarp covering its load, which could have been anything from ping pong balls to, say, granite tombstones. No way to tell.
Yeah.
I was driving, and since there was one truck in each lane, I had to stop behind one of them, right? So I asked my co-pilot which one I should stop behind. I don't know, he said. What does it matter? Well, I said, I'd like to stop behind the truck that's likely to accelerate faster when the light turns green.
Mm.
Oh, he said, and started thinking about it. In that case, stop behind the cement truck. And he was right.
Really?
When the signal changed, yep, the cement truck, although no jackrabbit, did beat out that dump truck. So the question was, did my friend have X-ray vision? Was it a lucky guess or something else? And I had to put in, what was it? Because your answer last week was something else.
Oh, that's right. I knew I had this one figured out.
Well, he didn't have X-ray vision, and I guess I threw a little curveball by suggesting that the dump truck's contents were invisible. But what was visible, really, was the cement truck's contents. Even though he couldn't see into the cement truck, he knew there was no cement in it.
Because it wasn't turning around.
The drum wasn't turning, exactly.
Exactly.
So if he were a betting man, he would have bet on the cement truck.
Whoa.
Do we have a winner?
Yeah. The winner this week is Matthew Patterson from Seattle, Washington, and for having his answer selected at random from the pile of correct answers that we actually got, Matthew's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com, with which he can get our brand new 4-CD set, Field Guide to the North American Wacko.
Now, this collection has four shows that we feel demonstrate beyond a shadow of a doubt that NPR should be doing a much better job of screening our calls. I mean, listen to the people who call us.
You know who's on one of those shows? Red. Remember Red?
No, I can't say I remember Red.
He decided to live the dream. He buys himself a 75 Pontiac Granville convertible.
Oh, yeah, that's one of those monstrous land yachts, like your 74 Impala, right?
Right. He rounds up his buddy, puts his kids in the back, and goes out for the inaugural ride to get the kids ice cream. And the floor of the car catches fire.
Mon Dieu!
He took it like a champ, though. I like Red.
Well, he's just one of many callers on Field Guide to the North American Wacko.
Yeah, congratulations, Matthew.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so stay tuned for that. Until then, if your car's giving you a hard time, call us and we'll add to your troubles. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Van Nuys, California.
Hi, Jennifer. Oh. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on?
Well, I have a 2001 Volkswagen Beetle, and I've had it in the shop on average every 3 months since I've had it for the past 8 years.
That's too bad.
Yeah, not so good. And I never had the heart to sell it because I knew I'd be selling someone a piece of junk, and I thought that every repair would be the last repair.
Right, but somewhere deep down inside, you knew.
I knew, yes. So it's time for me to get rid of the car, and I know I could probably get, you know, a couple thousand dollars for it, but that's just not satisfactory to me. So I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I would really like to take the car out to a field and charge people like a dollar a swing and just go to town on the car. And I figure I could make some money, and I would have a lot of enjoyment out of doing this and just destroying the car. And so my question is what parts from the car would be salvageable that I could sell to a mechanic before I take this car out?
Oh, I see. So you want to just take the carcass out there.
Yeah, or I don't know. Like, I just want to see, like, what I can get from, you know, any monetary value I can get at this
how
point.
How many miles on this car?
It's got about 150,000, but,
oh, it
but
does.
The engine, they Volkswagen had to replace the engine a couple of years ago, so the engine only has, you know, 10,000-15,000 miles on it.
So the engine is worth a few thousand dollars.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. So someone who needed an engine would be happy to pay you for the engine, and there are dozens and hundreds, thousands maybe, of other parts that are valuable. Not to mention things like the transmission, the glass. You want to leave the glass. No, maybe you want to take the glass out.
Someone's going to get hurt.
So you want to do this because you're so angry at this car.
Wow.
That you want, not only you, do you want to beat the snot out of it, but you want complete strangers to come by and beat your car up. What makes you think that they'll have this? They'll be able to strike this car with the same vehemence and dislike that you harbor for this car?
Well, I figure people like destroying things, and so this would be an opportunity to destroy a car. They could be destroying it on behalf of any car problems they have.
So if maybe so, I could see that you could sell off all the usable pieces of the car.
Uh-huh.
Not, you know, of course you wouldn't be able to sell the body, which is a rather expensive and usable piece and valuable piece.
But, you're going to destroy that.
You're going to destroy that, but you'll sell enough of the other pieces to get some money, and then maybe you can turn this into a charitable event.
I thought about that, yeah.
But you're throwing away a lot of money here because you have a car, the body of which is pretty good maybe, and the engine of which is very good.
Well, and my other question is just if you've ever done this before yourselves or known of anyone.
Well, like, not when customers are watching.
No, I never had a car that would...
That could take that kind of punishment. No, we've never done this before. No, we love cars, Jennifer. And I think when you get a chance to rethink this, you'll realize that maybe the car has feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about that too. But I thought maybe this would be a monumental way to go out.
Yeah, and it is kind of wasteful to smash up a car whose fenders and doors and whatnot could be sold to somebody. And, you know, and you know, and recycle it rather than making a new fender and door. They could use yours.
I mean,
okay.
I could never do this.
It's not a green. It's not a very green thing to do.
Oh no, it's not. I mean, this is a car that could last 10 more years.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
But someone else. You're certainly
with
not
someone
so,
else.
So I
yeah.
think we need to figure out, Jennifer, while we're talking, we need to talk you down off the ledge today.
I think we do have to do that.
Know you're angry. I know you're frustrated, and you really like to. So you need to get.
You're in Van Nuys, so if there's somebody in the Van Nuys area who really needs a car, doesn't have any money, wouldn't it be nice to give the car to somebody?
But if it breaks down, then they have to take it in.
But they got it for nothing.
Sure.
You can stop someone on the street and say, you look like you need a car. And you could just give them the thing.
That might be fun. Just a random person.
And you make yourself a big placard, and you stand on a street corner, and the sign in front of you says, anybody want a free car? And the car is parked right there at the curb.
But I think whoever gets the car has to be deserving. So you need to have some kind of a little essay contest, maybe. Why I need Jennifer's car.
Oh, that's fun. I like that idea.
Yeah.
And you can divulge to whomever you give the car to that it has been a nightmare. And they can turn around and sell it, trade it in. They can smash it up with a hammer if they want. But I don't think that ought to be you, Jennifer.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, and I think in the interest of good sense and being green and all that, I think you need to give the car to somebody. And understandably, this was not a very reliable car.
No.
So you need to give the car to somebody who can drive it, and knowing its shortcomings, will be able to accept them simply because the car is free.
Yeah.
And you can just punch a closet or something, punch a closet door.
I think you guys have successfully talked me down.
Or buy a plastic.
Wonderful.
Buy a plastic model of the car and stomp on it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, run over it.
Excellent.
Jen, we wish you the very best. Let us know how you make out.
Thank you so much.
Excellent.
Bye-bye. Let us know how the psychotherapy's working out. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Eric from Providence, Rhode Island.
With a C or a K?
With a C.
Yeah.
Hi, Eric.
Providence, Hi. Rhode Island?
Yes, indeed.
What's going on, man?
Wow.
I drive a 1999 Honda Accord, and it's a wonderful car.
It certainly
but
is.
But that's not really why I'm calling. I need you guys to save my marriage, which is my wife and I have this disagreement. It's actually about something that happens in the winter, which, you know, might come around again one day.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's cold and the windows get fogged up or frosted up,
yeah,
we have this debate about running the defogger. She says that you should run it with the AC compressor turned on and push the little AC button. It's like air conditioning. It's 20 degrees outside. You don't need air conditioning.
Well, you never know. And what do you think?
I think it doesn't make much difference, and it hurts the gas mileage. Running the compressor takes power away from the engine.
Yeah. Well, you are right that that does take some power from the engine. However.
However.
Can your ego take this?
Well,
is there money riding on this, or a dinner, or a trip to Paris, or something?
There's some car washes riding on this.
Uh-huh. Oh, car washes done in the driveway.
Right.
How many?
A few, a summer's worth.
Buy a new bathing suit. Because you're going to be doing them. No, she's right.
Okay.
And your window will defog faster if the AC's on. You may have noticed that your car has two little buttons on the dash, one for recirculating the air and one for fresh air.
Right.
Okay, whenever you run the defroster, it should always be on fresh air.
Right, right.
Because otherwise, you'll just be recirculating the same moisture that you brought into the car.
Right.
With your hot breath, the snow and ice on your boots and whatnot.
And it just recycles it and it makes more of a problem.
Right.
But if you turn the AC on, even though it does, I know, refrigerate the air, you're pumping out enough hot air through the heater to counteract that and then some.
Right.
But what you're also doing is removing that moisture that's been accumulating in the passenger compartment. And the windows will defrost in no time.
Okay.
I know it's hard to believe that turning something on that makes cold can make frost go away.
Right.
But she's right.
So I guess I should start shopping for car soap.
Yes, and I would do that.
And a bathing suit and flip-flops.
Okay, well, thanks a lot,
guys. And have her take a picture of you and email it to us. We'll put it on our website.
Will do.
See you, Eric.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He could take a joke.
Yeah, we'll see how he's doing in August. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. 8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Tatiana calling from Davis, California.
Tatiana.
Yes. What a nice name.
Oh, thank you.
From
I like
Davis.
It, too.
That's one of our favorite places.
Yeah.
It is. It's very nice.
Yeah,
here.
We spent 3 days there one afternoon.
I'm surprised you took that long to bake.
No, actually,
no, we hung around there for a while, and we had a good time.
Yeah, we hung out with Andy Frank. We were doing this thing for PBS called The Car of the Future.
Uh-huh.
And Andy Frank, who works in the mechanical engineering department, has been working on a plug-in hybrid for about 75 years. And I think they finally figured it out. But he was a great guy, and we fell in love with the town.
He may still be a great guy.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a really good program for stuff like that up here.
And you guys have a lot of cows on the campus.
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah. If you, you know, play softball or soccer on the fields, you definitely get that cow smell every day.
And I remember lots of bicycles.
Yes. The first week of classes, you don't want to ride your bike because all the freshmen get into accidents.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when Tommy was there, he caused a couple. Anyway, what's up, Tatiana?
So I have a 1993 Ford Escort LX, and it's got about 121,000 miles on it.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is that there is a squeaking that is coming from somewhere between the dashboard and the floor on the driver's side. And the squeaking starts at approximately like 15 miles an hour. And it's louder when I accelerate, but it's also there when I decelerate.
And is it a constant sound or is it changing in pitch?
Yeah, make the noise for us, Tatiana. Embarrass yourself.
There you are. You start
4 or 5 million people. Go ahead.
Well, it sounds kind of like a hamster wheel that needs some WD-40.
Yeah.
So do you have to be moving to get it?
Yes. And it only happens like after 15 miles an hour.
15.
Yes.
She's a 93 Escort. It sounds to me like it's a speedometer cable that's making noise. Now, I'm not sure that this car has a speedometer cable. Cars don't have speedometer cables anymore.
Okay.
The way speedometers worked for about 1,000 years is that a small cable ran into the transmission, and one end of it was attached to a gear, which was driven by the transmission final drive, so that as fast as the wheels were turning, this cable turned, and that motion got sent through the cable up to the speedometer head, which is in the dashboard.
And it would actually spin right there.
And it would spin, and it would create magnetism, actually, and it would move the needle, okay? And if that cable was not properly lubricated or it started to wear out and fray, then it would make that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then as you go faster and faster, it increases in lockstep with your speed. So at 20 miles an hour, the are twice as fast as they were at 10.
Right, exactly.
You know, so if you have a cable, then that's what it is. And I'm pretty sure you do.
Okay, so my car isn't going to die on me.
No. What's going to happen is
the speedometer is going to die on you.
Yeah, the cable will break someday, and the noise will be gone.
And you'll be going 0 miles an hour all the time.
So I guess what you need to do to figure out whether it's the speedometer head or the cable is to have somebody disconnect the cable from the speedometer head.
Okay.
If the noise goes away, then it was the head that's making the noise, that thing that where the needle is. If the noise stays, then it's the cable. Chances are very good that it's the cable.
And is that very expensive?
What do you consider very expensive? Are you a student?
Not anymore.
They threw you out, huh? Have you told your folks yet?
Well, my dad actually recommended me that I call you guys.
Oh,
so.
Okay. I would imagine you're looking at, you know, maybe $100 and something.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not too bad.
No.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you so
much.
Hope
they don't find anything else while they're in there. Like the hamster. See ya.
Hi.
Bye-bye. Look, it's time for us to take another much-needed break.
Much-needed? You don't expect anyone to believe that, do you?
All right, how about, well-deserved?
That's even more of a stretch.
All right, how about contractually stipulated? How's that?
I think we can sell that.
Well, look, we'll be back in a minute with a new puzzler, and it's from my vaunted but underutilized Weekend Getaway series.
Oh, great. And we'll try to tackle more of your car questions, too, so please stay tuned.
You might have seen it in my driver on the side of the road, or flying down the highway with an oversized load. It rattles and it rumbles like a big can of bolts, but it goes 0 to 20 like some Palomino Colts. Now some people sneer when they hear the engine roar, but it's bought and paid for, can't ask for more, makes my poor heart sore. It's a reservation car. Reservation car. It ain't pretty and don't always take me far, but I wouldn't trade nothing for my reservation car. It's got rusted doors and floorboards, you can feel the wind blow. We may need to use our feet just like the Flintstones. The paint is chipped and peeling where the bumper stickers aren't. Dreamcatcher in the window now, isn't that smart? I know it ain't the kind of car for everyone, but it's got my hot one. Get yourself one for a ton of fun. Race car.
And even though PBS executives pelt their radios with leftover Yanni at the Acropolis videos whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. And
yeah.
This is going to be a deviation from the norm because I haven't messed with this very much at all. This was sent in by someone named Jim Blacksmith. Now, Blacksmith is like blacksmith, but with an E instead. Might be the Yiddish version. He's a blacksmith. Here's what he wrote in. And like I said, I didn't monkey with it all that much.
Yeah, go ahead.
My honey and I took a trip recently from Los Angeles to Monterey for a short vacation, like a weekend getaway. We left L.A. on a Friday morning at 7:10.
Mm-hmm.
The first 201 miles of the trip was on Highway 101, and we traveled at the normal freeway speed limit, plus a little when we could, right?
Mm.
At San Luis Obispo, we turned onto Highway 1 for the remaining 136 miles to Monterey. Highway 1 is a beautiful but narrow and winding road that follows the coastline, so our speed was, of course, much slower.
Mm-hmm.
We were eager to get to Monterey, so we only made the necessary fuel and schnurdling stops and arrived Friday afternoon at 2:35.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful time walking along Cannery Row, visiting the aquarium, exploring the Steinbeck Museum and Salinas, about all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
On Monday, we got up, had a leisurely breakfast, and left at 9:20 in the morning. We took the same route back to L.A., but this time we were not in any hurry. We stopped many times to take pictures and enjoy the scenic coastline along Highway 1, and we arrived at home in L.A. Monday evening at 6:10. Okay, so you got the picture now?
Yeah.
So we left L.A. at 7:10 on Friday, and we arrived at Monterey at 2:35 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we drove 337 miles to do that. Okay?
337.
Right. And then on Monday morning, we left Monterey at 9:20 and drove those same 337 miles and got back to L.A. at 6:10.
That's 9 hours.
Okay. Here's the question. What's the probability that there was a place along our route that we reached at the same time of day on our trip to Monterey and the return trip to L.A.?
Really?
By the way, we pretty much obeyed the speed limits.
Wow, let me get this again.
No, too late. So here's the question. You got all the details. They drove 337 miles, left L.A., drove to Monterey, drove the same route back, but they left different times, right? They left at 7:10 on Friday,
the way down,
and arrived 2:35 that same day. And then on the return trip, they left at 9:20 and got home at 6:10 in the evening.
Yeah.
And here's the question. What's the probability that there was a place along our route that we reached at the same time of day on our trip to Monterey and the return trip to L.A.? Good question, eh?
Well, what kind of an answer do you want? What's the probability?
Yeah, is it 5%, 10%, 90%, 30%?
Really want a number.
I want a number. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the bottom of, I'm interested in this, an Amazon Kindle wireless reading device with electronic paper look, high-resolution screen, WhisperNet wireless access, ergonomic design, of course, 200 title capacity, adjustable text size, built-in dictionary, and send it preloaded with the complete works of Tony Hilleman and a copy of The Idiot's Guide to Hosting an NPR Show to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
I know the answer to this.
Well, I know, but I don't want the answer from you.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. My name is Howard. I'm from Laurel, Maryland.
Hi, Howard.
I got a 2001 PT Cruiser, and I got to say, I just love this car. Not that it's all that special, but I just paid it off a month ago.
Uh-huh.
So.
Did the love increase then when you have to...
Exactly. Except that, you know, after I paid it off, it might have been about a full minute later that things really started going wrong on it. First thing was it started overheating, so I went through a new thermostat and finally replacing the radiator, and now I'm down to replacing the head gasket and head on it. But that's not even really what I called about, just to set it up.
Oh, this is just a little background information.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's in the garage right now as we speak, having all that stuff addressed. But I noticed a few days ago, every time I turn my steering wheel to the right, the car starts making these sounds like it's the soundtrack from a cartoon show. I don't know if you ever watched Scooby-Doo with your kids or anything like that, but, you know, there's always a ghost who's not really a ghost, just a guy in a sheet, and he always inevitably opens a creaky door or steps on a floorboard and makes a sound like...
And it does that when you take a right turn.
Yeah, only when I turn my steering wheel to the right or as the steering wheel is coming back to the center. And I can't tell if that sound is like... coming from the steering column or somewhere in the mechanisms that turn the wheels.
It could be. Do you have to be moving to get it?
No.
And if you had to guess where it's coming from, what would you guess? Inside the car or outside? We'll start with A or B.
Probably I would say outside towards the front right.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's up in the front right anyway?
Ball joints.
Yeah, it's very likely.
Ball joints.
It's very likely to be a dried up ball joint. You know, modern cars like yours, not Tommy's, but most modern cars do not have grease fittings. You know, the old days you went in for an oil change and a lube job, and the lube job involved hooking up a grease gun to these Zerk fittings, and you would squeeze grease into all the joints and replenish the stuff that had gotten old and dried out and whatnot. Well, when your grease dried up in your ball joint, it got harder and harder and stopped lubricating, and the ball joint is now a metal ball.
A metal against metal.
Riding against either metal or plastic, you know, nylon or something, and it's making that But the good news is that it'll do it without driving the car. So you don't have to strap anyone to the hood. You can actually feel this. If you put your hand on the ball joint, I bet you, and it could be the tie rod end too, but as you turn that wheel, you'll get that noise. Now, why it doesn't make it coming back the other way, I don't know, but I've seen that happen before. It'll make the noise in one direction only. But it's either the ball joint that's attached to that right front wheel or the tie rod end.
There you go.
And while it's in there, I mean, you're going to spend thousands of bucks. Have him throw a couple of ball joints in it.
Right.
When he figures out what it is, what we do is we poke a small hole in the rubber dust boot of the ball joint, and we squirt in some penetrating oil, you know, like WD-40 or something.
And the noise goes away,
and that tells you the ball joint needs to be replaced.
So am I looking at thousands of more dollars to fix this?
No. Hundreds.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to spend a lot of money doing the cylinder head, though, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking into it's in about 2,800 range right now.
So are you still feeling the love or what?
Not entirely, but I have to make this last, you know?
Yeah. Call us next month. Let us know you're making out. We'll talk
Thanks,
you down
guys.
Off the ledge.
Thanks so much.
See you, Howard.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hello. Hi, my name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Where are you from?
Hi, I'm from Moore Park, California.
What?
Moore Park, California.
Moore Park.
It's out in Ventura County.
Okay, I know where you are, Rosalie. What's going on, Lisa?
I have a minivan. I have a Toyota Sienna, and I have three young children, a one-year-old, a three-year-old, and a five-year-old.
Okay.
And we have a CD player and a tape player, and my children put a bunch of coins into the CD player and the tape player. And I was wondering if I can take my tweezers and just go in there and pull those things out, or if I'll get electrocuted if I try and do that.
No, you won't get electrocuted, but I bet you're not going to be able to get the stuff out easily.
Who did this, the three-year-old or the five-year-old?
Everyone's keeping mum, so I don't know who did it.
But... Yeah, I'm guessing it was a collaborative effort, the three-year-old and five-year-old.
Right.
And they must have had so much fun. Think about it.
Oh, yeah, we had much fun when we did it to your CD player last week. So you're not going to get electrocuted, but I'm guessing you won't be able to get enough of them out.
Yeah.
How many did they put in? Do you know?
I have no idea. I just know that my coin holder was pretty full, and now it's empty. and we're listening to the same stuff on the radio over and over and over, and I'd love to have my CD player back. Can you think of another way for me to get those things out?
Well, yeah, you gotta flip the car upside down.
Flip the car over
and shake it.
You try climbing a really steep hill and then pounding on the dashboard. Now, I would just take it to your shop, and they'll pull the radio out.
Okay.
You know, because it's a radio CD, but it's all one unit on this car, I believe, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And they'll pull the thing out and tell them they can keep all the money they can get out of it.
Yeah, that might be worth it, huh?
Yeah.
And you're right. It's not going to be easy to get it out.
Not if you try to do it with tweezers. I don't think you're going to get anything out with tweezers.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but I wasn't sure what else I could try and get in there.
Yeah, but I think taking it out and turning it upside down is probably the best bet.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they'll probably get the stuff out. It's you know, there's not much room for it to go where it can't be shaken out, but they may have to take it all apart.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you might be better off just going to a junkyard and for $50 or something like that, buying a used one. And sticking it in there and, you know, hoping that everything works on that one.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks so much.
See you, Lisa.
Great. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name is Dylan. I'm in Clackamas, Oregon.
Whoa.
Your name is what?
Dylan.
Dylan.
Like Dylan Thomas, the poet.
D-Y-L-A-N. And you're from what town?
Clackamas, it's a county just outside of Portland, Oregon.
Is there a Clickamas, too? and this is in Oregon?
Yeah, right south of Portland.
All right.
Okay, now we got it.
All right, Dylan,
what's up?
When I was stationed in Dover, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, my submarine was out of there. I bought a new 88 Toyota pickup truck up there in Dover.
Uh-huh.
So I put 23,000 miles on it, got transferred to Hawaii. That was rough. And I asked my mother in Seattle to take care of it while I was in Hawaii. Well, she borrowed it for about 16 years.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. So she had a couple fender benders. I got an 87 fender on one side and an 86 door on the other. And but it's in great shape mechanically. It's only got 103,000 miles in it for all that time.
Well, when it spends that much time in the body shop, you can't pile up the miles, right?
Exactly. But she's a sweet thing, my mom. And I told her, though, never get rid of it because I want it back when you're all done with it.
Yeah.
And apparently my brothers weren't done with it either. They're both mechanics, so they spooked me before I got it back by telling me about the timing chain. And so ever since then, I've been tuned in on it. Being an industrial mechanic, I listen to the as it's coming up on torque, knowing that's a chain and probably a tensioner, and it's the timing chain because they told me about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember because it's been so long. It's been so long since I knew what normal was and not normal.
Yeah.
Oh, so far as the noise.
Exactly. I'm tuned in on it because my brother's played a psychological game on me, I think.
Oh, yeah? They're trying to drive you crazy?
Pretty much.
We've been doing that to my brother, and it worked!
Well, I'm the oldest, so I get, you know, the two younger ones team up on me.
This chain noise you hear, a bad chain, this is probably one of those 22RE engines.
Exactly. It's an 88 22R.
And and this thing will make a noise that sounds like a bunch of marbles, and they're like...
Nope. This is a smooth, like a chain on a tensioner.
Jeez, I don't like it.
Yeah?
Well, usually when the tensioner's bad, it doesn't quite make that noise. It'll sound like that first noise I made, or maybe like a baseball card stuck in spokes. You'll get that...
Yeah, that's why I'm not thinking it's bad.
Well, here's what I think you should do. You should take off the other drive belts.
Okay.
And run the engine and see if the noise is still there. Because you may be getting distracted by other noises, and maybe it's your power steering that's making the noise or your water pump.
I have no power steering on this one. It's
not anymore, huh? Oh, you didn't...
No, I never did, actually. I was a seaman, so I didn't have any money, so I had to get the bare bones.
Oh, so you didn't have air conditioning either?
Nope.
So you have one belt on the car.
Okay.
So take that one belt off.
You have to eliminate all the other noises.
So, because it could be the water pump or the alternator, and taking that one belt off will take those out of the picture. And then when you rev it up, if the noise is gone, then it isn't the timing chain or the tensioner, and it's one of those two things.
Okay.
And from your description, I'm getting the feeling that it's not the timing chain. I think your brothers, are trying to drive you nuts.
Well, yeah, they, every time they needed fence boards, they go and borrow mom's truck.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now they're disappointed they got to go buy their own trucks.
Yeah.
Well, I think you could easily have a bad water pump.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because the thermostat did, I replaced that, and it's back on par now, and it doesn't seem to be fluctuating. It seems to maintain cooling.
Well, the water pump would work and circulate the coolant well, even though it had a bad bearing in it.
Okay.
And it could make noise and still function properly until finally it gives up the ghost. When the bearing fails, the seal will blow and the water pump will leak.
And that'll be the end of it.
But you want to catch it before it does that. Take the belt off and run it with the belt off.
Okay, but not very long, right?
Oh, you can run it for a minute or so.
Okay, okay. But enough to see if it's there or not.
Exactly.
Excellent, excellent.
Good luck, Dylan.
Hey, I'm glad I called you guys.
Well, you might not be. Give it a few days to sink in. Good luck, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Look, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Point Reyes, Roasted Maize, Spare Rib Braise, Donut Glaze, Frito-Lays, Mayonnaise, Vitamin K, Summer Days, Grab and Graze, John Bugs. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our physical therapist is Estelle Hoitz. Our staff naturalist is Deirdre Oppings. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our anger management coach is Violet Temper. Our bail bondswoman is Frida Wander. Our luncheon chef is Hannah Mia Canatuna. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. And our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the grouchy summer school students in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 825, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce Division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, did you miss last week's Car Talk?
Congratulations!
If for some reason you want to catch up, you can download our free podcast right from the homepage.
Now, you may have to give your iPod those anti-rejection drugs first, so the show will take, right?
Check out all the download options anytime at the iFume section of cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Paul Pierce clangs one off the rim whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.